This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with Spartans Women's Basketball Coach Susie Merchant.
It's really a pleasure for Mark and I to welcome Coach Susie Merchant back to the show. It's one of our annual visits. We always enjoy it immensely. And so before we begin, so tell us sort of what's it like to be a coach in May and June as opposed to in the season?
All this free time you have.
Yeah, what, you know, the kinds of things that you're confronted with and what people would view as the off season.
Well, I guess the positive thing about May and June is we can't leave campus and go recruiting. That is, and that sounds terrible, but that is a positive because it does allow you to really invest in the kids that you have on your list and get to know them better. I mean, we have obviously a lot of new rules that allow us easier access to them directly, which has been fun. And I just think it's a time that allows us to really make sure we're on the right path with every kid and where maybe some of our needs are. Also, for me, it's a really good time to self-evaluate and reflect on areas that we have to get better at as a group and as a staff, and so spend quite a bit of time doing that right now.
So when I want to bounce over ideas, I have a sort of a list of past presidents, current presidents who they're all different, and so I almost ask the same question of about five people who are very different. And I get five different answers, and I try to synthesize those that will work for me to try to think about this generative process for the next year. What do you do?
Well, it's probably similar. I always start with the inner circle first. I think we've got some amazing coaches, and although we might not coach the exact same sport, I think you got some pretty special resources here on campus. And actually, I think even outside of coaches, I think there's some, you know, really special leadership here at Michigan State. I've spent some time with Vinny Gore and Scott Westerman, people like that that offer different perspectives, maybe not coaching, but leadership based. And then as far as coaches, definitely, I have a lot of people that I rely on in the league. I'm good friends with that we really connect. In fact, you know, we were at the Nike dinner in Nashville for the Final Four, and the Princeton coach is a really good friend of mine along with the Purdue coach, and so we're working on a time when the three of us can sit down and figure a way to get on the phone or do a Skype session where we can just talk about ideas and bounce things off. But you know, everyone from a Teresa Grentz, who's, you know, long been gone from our women's basketball kind of realm, to people that are current and within our league, as well as mid-major coaches.
I think that is one of the challenges in leadership is you have a tendency, I think, early on in your leadership to surround yourself with people that share your philosophies or share your direction. And as you go through time, you find the most valuable information is coming from those that are most unlike you. And it's interesting you bring that up. One of the things we try to do with our coaches each year is put them in an environment that's outside their comfort zone. So we've done things with the Big Ten Network and with General Motors and the Proving Grounds. And this year we're bringing in a variety of what I consider, you know, Spartans and non-Spartans, but great leaders in their own right to provide information and share philosophies. And hopefully it's something the coaches walk away with and kind of pulls them together in a positive way. But it's that finding people that are unlike you to make you better is one of the first characteristics, I think, to being a good leader.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And we always enjoy that when we do the coaches on the road. I think initially it was a little more, you know, outreach, and now it's really become more of a professional development, a way to connect, because as coaches and athletic directors and presidents, we're all pulled in a lot of different directions and wear so many different hats that to be able to just really shut the outside world and sit down and draw from each other and experiences and a simple 2-3-4 hour bus ride to wherever we have to go. There's a lot of information shared in those meetings and or those rides where you don't always have the time to do that during the season.
It's one of the things I picked up from Dan Gilbert and many others is that so many times your focus is on individuals that are outside your organization, your company, your business, and you don't take time to sit and share. Sometimes our coaches, this is the only time they really get together in a meaningful way and have those kind of conversations. And it's fun to just sit back and kind of watch as it develops.
Contrary to the popular press, there have been some rule changes that are positive for coaches and for student athletes. I do think that the opportunity for you to work with your current student athletes more intensely, not dribbling the ball, but in a personal social sense, is a real plus. I know it puts a little bit of a burden on coaches and how you spend your time, but I think it is a good trade-off from flying around the country trying to find another player.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think one of the things I've been reflecting on as I look back on my career, one of the most frustrating things I find is the lack of time, quite honestly. It's the time that I had with my players was the time I valued the most, and what got me into coaching and what's kept me in coaching. And sometimes it isn't always there with our schedules and demands. And so this, the opportunity to have access to them in the summer, through the spring, through the summer, and not violate any rules like that would have happened in the past. I mean, just having someone required to come in and meet with you as a head coach in the past would have been a violation. So it's nice to be able to just have that extra time and build. And like you said, it isn't even about a basketball. It's just about connecting. And the other piece to that is sometimes we recruit these kids, tell them we're going to take care of them and we're going to be there for them, and then they report at the end of June, 1st of July, and that's when we hit the road recruiting and we're nowhere to be found for the next 4 weeks. So this is a really nice balance and some changes that have happened on the side of basketball that I'm really excited about and have made a difference.
I'm really not sure you can get complete balance, and I know it's no different than students that are coming to campus, but you really have four segments. You have prospects that you're trying to get to Michigan State. You have that transitional period of once they've committed, but yet they're not fully on board. Then they're here as a student, and then they leave, and they're still part of your family. And it's really balancing those four segments, much like you have to do with students across campus or each department does. It's a challenge to find time for those kids and their families and their problems and their issues. You want to get to know them before they're here. Mm-hmm. And you somewhat have limitations in that process. We probably spend a considerable amount of time in the transition and while they're here, but it's those two flanks where we really wish we had more time.
You're a mother. You have two rambunctious young men who like to play sports in their own way, and you see yourself as a mother of a, if not a hockey player, a basketball player, or a soccer player, whatever the moment's interest
is. Or a superhero.
A superhero. Those are always good. Yeah. We could use a couple.
Hey, when mom's Wonder Woman, you know,
When
you're 1 year old and you do make the interest into wrestling, you know, it probably has a lasting impact. But you think about that from a parent perspective. Mark's been through this, and then you see the young people that you work with, your program and around the program. Sort of, what are your observations about as you think about your young kids growing into the people you see around the gym or the university?
Well, I think what's fascinating is I look back at myself, and I don't know if I ever stepped foot on a college campus until I was in high school, quite honestly. So the fact that I have a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old right now that walk into Breslin or on campus, go to football games, know that all they're going to know is after high school I go to college. That's just what you do. I think there's an innate kind of simplistic view of that that probably innately will be, you know, bred through them. But I think the neat thing that I've noticed is they are much more aware of other people at a young age, and it's happened through school situations where I've, you know, different teachers and principals have talked to me, because all they've known is been cheering for someone else. And it's kind of an unusual trait for a 3-year-old to cheer for another 3-year-old that, you know, just got to be the line leader for the day. They're not as empathetic, and it's always about them. So it's interesting teamwork. And I have two little boys, as you mentioned, so the fact they're cheering for young women is a positive thing too. I think there's just so many things I don't always think about. I think about what am I missing, and really it's really about some of the messages they're getting every day that you don't always think about.
So tell us a bit about women's basketball.
You know, we're excited. I thought we ended on a really positive note. I think, you know, to come out as a Big Ten champion this year with some of the adversity and challenges that we faced, and our two leading scorers being freshmen, I think really said a lot about the resiliency of this group. You know, there wasn't a lot of superstars in the mix, but there certainly was a lot of great team play and find a way to connect. What I found interesting about this group, we won a championship, and the group before that, the year before that, it was such a uniquely different group of kids. And I say that as we were very young this year, you know, and as the leader, you got to figure out what language it is you have to speak to the people you lead. And my language was a lot different the year before than it was this year. And I don't mean that being negative. I'm just saying that I think sometimes as a leader, you can't coach the same group in the same way all the time. And that was hard. I mean, I had to be a lot more aggressive as a leader. I had to take the reins a lot more and have more of a commanding presence. And I think as coaches, we always do that. But at the same time, you know, I've always believed that you got to figure out what it is that makes your team tick and push the buttons when necessary. And that was the challenge. You know, I didn't quite get it till about December, and we went through some up and downs. But once we got it going, I mean, to be 13-3 and, you know, win a Big Ten championship, I think says a lot about this group of kids, and figured out a way to get them to respond anyway.
But they played young for a while.
Very young, and no defense. Yes, and that was a bit of an issue for me. So we had to buckle down and, like I said, find out what language each one of them speaks and figure a way to connect with them that way.
Do you see, if you take this class, these young players you have, the young women, and let's say 3 years ago, are they different? Or can you tell the difference? And what would that difference be?
I just think that they get it. It sounds simple, but they understand the grind and the challenges and when to push and when to step back. I think their mental game gets better. We spend a lot of time nowadays coaching neck up. You know, it is what it is, and I think a lot of kids come in here with you know, might have the skill set and the talent, but they don't really have the mental toughness that it takes to be a winner at this level. And so I think freshmen and sophomore, and sometimes even into their junior year, there's a lot of neck up coaching. And you always continue to do that, but it's kind of fun to watch kids, you know, go through that process. And sometimes it's a struggle and it's a fight, but it's always worth it in the end. It always is worth it in the end.
That's really, I think, where folks grow as human beings, because those skills are something that are transferable away from basketball to being a student to life in general.
Yeah, I got the best text on Mother's Day. It was from LaKendra Johnson, who played here, and she sent me this text about how she wouldn't be the person she is today if I wasn't in her life, and that she's so thankful her journey included mm-hmm. me, and just happy Mother's Day, Coach, and you'll always be a second mom to me. And I think about that, and we had some struggles, her and I. And just to get a text like that, it's the one thing that definitely inspires you and keeps you going, and know that you're doing the right thing.
So now you have an experienced group coming, a more experienced group coming back with a little bit of swagger.
Yeah.
And now you have to sort of mold the swagger a little bit into productive swagger.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's no time to get fat and happy, as they say, or complacent. It's time to put to build on that. You know, it'll be interesting to see where our leadership comes from this year. And I'm looking forward to watching that develop and grow. And I think those freshmen learned a lot this year. You know, they don't know what they don't know. They think they do, and they come in here and they get through the season, and they're like, wow, you know, that was really intense.
Part of that has with that whole transition of the tournament is you win a championship, you get in the NCAA. Talking to Stacy Sablod next door, who makes the golf, you know, the national championships, and didn't perform like she wanted, but she has to look, you know, what's behind her, what's in her wake, and what were the positives, what's on her bow, what's on the horizon. That session in the locker room after that last game, there's one team that wins, and everybody else has the same feeling. But it's what happens in that moment in time in that locker room that really propels where you are headed in your conversation for the next year. It's interesting to watch coaches in that setting and how they spend that 5 minutes to an hour right after a game and preparing for the following year.
Yeah, that's a tough conversation always. It really is. It challenges you. You want it to be meaningful, certainly, and impactful. You know, I know the one thing I always do is really reach out to our seniors and thank them genuinely for what they've given the university and our program, and how much I do appreciate their efforts and challenges that they've faced. And That's I know I do that. Then beyond that, it's how you prepare. That's the next thing. How well do you know your team? Mm-hmm. So you got to have that connection to appreciate the group that just led you there. And then at the same time, you got to send yourself into the next year without making sure that you didn't just respect the group that just, you know, okay,
right.
Game
You're
over,
gone.
On to the next year. Thank right. you very much.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, and that was the first senior class that has ever won two Big Ten championships in the history of the program.
Right.
So to come in as a freshman, contribute, probably not as significantly mm-hmm. as you did, but to watch their journeys take place
yeah.
and stay with it and fight through it and keep working and then mm-hmm. to lead us to a championship their senior year was pretty special.
I always like it when one of the underclassmen we'll make a comment, and it might not be a strong one, but at least it's a comment that talks about the future. And you see that a lot in our student athletes, is that resilience, mm-hmm. is that push for the next level of doing something for those that have left in the future. And I think mm-hmm. that's the beauty of most all of our programs here at Michigan State.
Part of what I think I feel really good about here is that while we have people who are successful as individuals and coaches that others would want to have on their campus, we also have people who really do get that these are kids and that their job, their role is not simply wins and losses. It really is about the development of a lot of young people with very different backgrounds, in many ways different skills, and that the life lessons that come from that are really critical.
You know, it's something that we look at heavily in this department, and I know not every athletic director or president does. It's of great value, I think, to this institution and to this state to have people that have that background and have that feeling. You assess programs beyond the scoreboard, and don't get me wrong, it's important to win, but it's important to win in everything that we do, and it's that blended success that I think is the strength of Susie and Tom and Mark and all the others.
Yeah, I can remember sending a text after we got our grades in the second semester, and that's the most challenging semester for all basketball players anyway because of the travel mm-hmm. and the grind. And our team GPA was a 3.1, and I was so proud of them, you know, because congratulations for uh-huh. being champions on and off the court, and that's not easy to do. One of our kids had her first ever 4.0 semester, so it was pretty special to watch some of those kids perform at a high level and at the same time do what they're supposed to off the court, too.
Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you for having me.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was Spartans women's basketball coach Susie Merchant talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans athletic director Mark Hollis. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Now here's President Simon and AD Hollis with Phil Gardner. Phil leads both the Career Services Network and the Collegiate Employment Research Institute at MSU. And his advice for parents is...
Well, don't panic. That's the first thing, because since 2008 and the economy being as bad as, I mean, people really panicked and we swung and everything's about a job. But the strength of Michigan State's education, of higher pursuing a higher degree in higher education is about the total person. And then, as President Simon said, our mission statement is not to get people employed. Ours is to put them in a position they can gain their lifelong aspirations. And so that comes not just from giving them tools to find a job. It comes from getting them immersed, like your freshman, into different situations, different contexts, to see what happens, to test what she wants to do as she moves from an undecided state into and firming up. In fact, we're going to spend a lot of time, more time on that in the early years. And for this year, one that's a junior, they're starting to put together the right pieces. I mean, they're doing study abroad. The next step is going to be internships, depending, or whatever the major is. I don't know what the major is, but whatever the steps are. And what he needs to do at that point is not just take him as separate, but begin to integrate and then look at where he wants to go and look at the skills, competencies, the work attitudes, the behaviors that he's built over a lifetime to this point and how they contribute. And if students can understand more about how they contribute, not just trying to find a job, but how they're going to offer themselves, we see a much different kind of transition if we're just trying to find jobs.
It is interesting as a parent when you watch your children, and you can work really hard at the smallest things, but I think the best best process is just to provide good values and then to watch them click and watch it change. And, you know, my son, it happened once in high school and I saw it happen again in college, where you start to question, you know, is he headed down the right path? And all of a sudden he's in a wonderful place and he's really interacting with some dynamic people.
The problem, and it's great when that happens, but we have a lot of students that it never clicks for them. They think they're doing the right thing, and if they're following somebody's script, but there's nothing in the script for them to turn the switch on. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones we're going to try to back up and get to and begin to stimulate them in a way that they can switch.
So if you think about, you know, most people look at these overall numbers, particularly through this recession, near depression, shorter job market. Through that period, actually, you know, we're in the 90% range of placing students either in jobs or graduate school after 6 months, which is the normal sort of period of time. And going to graduate school is what a lot of people say in their freshman surveys they want to do when they come here. That's one of the reasons they pick Michigan State, is because they're planning on pursuing a PhD or a master's or whatever. So how do you sort of reconcile some of those numbers with the dire numbers that are out there? And also, I think there's been a general depression of salary rates because in the economy, even if you're well prepared, people are paying less because it's supply and demand.
Right. So I mean, there are factors. Just removing so many jobs so quickly from the labor market or the opportunities for students, you know, just stalls salaries. In fact, we haven't seen a lot of growth in salaries. So even if you're done real well getting into a job, except in a few areas, and that's beginning to change, thank goodness, with more jobs. But the other thing is, in those numbers, we don't, and they're just coming out, we have employability, but we don't know what kind of jobs, if they're on career path. We do know that for Michigan State, but good, and most of them are. But if they're one of the numbers that now is bandied about is being underemployed. And we just don't have a good handle on that. There's been underemployment college graduates for a long time, depending on how they trend. Nothing new. It's just very stark when it's set against the backdrop we're having. What is the concern as we move out and create new jobs is we're going to continue to still hollow out some of the traditional jobs that we've always given to college students because of new technologies, smarter machines. So accounting and some of these areas are going to start getting hit. So we have to have students that are not just looking at a very narrow kind of job, but have the ability to look broadly and have the skills to go broadly as well as depth. So I do get to introduce my T concept. But the point is, there are going to be increasing opportunities, but they're not going to be necessary where they initially target, because once they get in the labor market, these jobs are going to come and go very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So we want to train and prepare and get students to believe and confident that they can do multiple things and feel good about, well, I see that this job's quickly is not going to go very much, but I've got these new skills and I can move over here and do something and start creating their own career paths rather than waiting for somebody to tell them what to do.
So part of the, you know, people, there are always new phrases that get bandied around at any given time. You've been working with corporate America for a very long time on the concepts of what they want, both long and short term in the people that they hire. And we know that jobs are coming and going at a rapid rate. Titles are changing. So this, quote, T-shaped idea is really that you have to have some specialization / depth. Probably, I think, in originally the T was like one area. You probably have to have maybe not as big a depth, but maybe more depth in multiple areas than you did in the past. And also this sense of who you are and your personal connections, as well as this other set of skills. So tell people what some of those are, because we just were out with IBM. You were just in a major conference, I think, in New York about 2 weeks ago with all the big employers talking about what college graduates should look like.
So you visualize a T, and it's metaphor, and it came introduced to me when I was trying to struggle with all the different disparate pieces that were now being pulled out by employers wanting, and it just fit. And when we look at it, it's nothing spectacularly new. We've just now intentionally looked at how higher education goes together, because we've always had knowledge, gaining mastery of your major, connecting interdisciplinarily, and then building skills that allow you to communicate. But we just did them over here in one place and did them in another. Now they're in the same place. So what we're looking at is gaining mastery in a discipline, but make sure that discipline is parallel by understanding the context for a problem that it can be used in. And that's the biggest new piece of this is it's not, again, is IBM calls them systems. President Simon calls them the grand challenges, but they fit. They fit. And so get involved in a grand challenge as well as a mastery of a major, because that's how you're going to figure. Then you go the boundary spanning, the breadth comes from building skills that transcend academic boundaries, functional boundaries, cultural boundaries, city-state boundaries. So you're learning to communicate in different ways. You're learning to solve problems in multidisciplinary teams, not just a team from your own major. You're looking at cultural awareness. You're looking at critical thinking, which really actually develops when you think across multiple disciplines at the same, and you see how they approach problems. It's looking at managing a project where you have to pull diverse pieces of information and talent together to make something work. So it's those are the kind of skills now that we want to instill in students. But the real heart of this, which is a switch, is surprising, is when you just develop depth in a major, that's what you pushed. And you became well known how well you commanded that. But the T, you have to know yourself. And you have to know what your values are. You have to have a sense of your career. You have to know how you relate to others. So that's where we're really focusing on here, not only in my area, but in the undergraduate under Doug Eastry. And we have built a common platform where both students coming in now will have the same message from the get-go. Academic success and professional success are on the same platform.
What's the tougher challenge, getting students to understand the breadth that they need, the dynamics that they need, or once they get there, having the boss, the superior, the management team that's open to that type of an employee coming into their system.
That was the IBM conversation as well.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
These are two very real problems, mm-hmm. and they come at different times. So let me tell you, the biggest challenge for myself and my staff will be the student up front piece, because we have to this calls for a change in student culture. It asks for them to get engaged, and you've got to begin to make integrate your experiences and have these experiences. And you can't wait and walk in your senior year and say, well, I need a job, tell me how to get it. No, it depends on what you've done your whole 3 years, how you're going to transition out. So getting all the students, not just 25% to 30% of them, to begin to think from the day they walk in that these things go together, and that they've got to start using their experiences and enriching themselves in different ways. That's the first major hurdle we get. Mm-hmm. Then the second major hurdle is the second question. If I'm going to produce these people, or in a sense that they're going to grow into these kind of people you want, mm-hmm. you better be, by golly, start intentionally recruiting and helping us develop them earlier on. Now, there are companies that are willing to do that, but we have a disconnect in the recruiting strategies between what the leaders say they want and how those messages get carried out in the spur of the moment, at the last minute decision. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I really just need somebody to do this. Go find them for me. And then 3 years later, say, well, that person didn't work out. We're going to let them go because I really needed somebody that had the broader skills. But right. So that we work on, we're going to have to work on in a different way. But I think we're going to establish MSU as producing these people. If you want these people to come here, and we'll make sure you get the best people. And then the companies that don't, we're going to have to struggle with.
You know, I walk around some of these career fairs and listen to what people are telling our students. And the people are there, including from IBM and other places that we're working with on this broader strategy, are looking for this sort of fix-it-today mentality. And what I think is and so that pushes a student to more and more specialization and narrower and narrower in terms of the nature of the part of the T, when in fact that may or may not serve the company or the individual very well as they try to move. And also because of the economy, the pay for those narrow things was significantly depressed. Now that with supply and demand changing, if you're an engineer or you're in certain areas, the prices are going back up again pretty dramatically with people who are coming with those kinds of degrees because supply and demand is such that it would happen. I would also say that we were founded as a land grant to blend practical and theoretical into a seamless web. If you listen to John Hanna in the 1950s, why we had basic college was to produce sort of citizen scholars who had all of these sort of characteristics for their company and for their community. And then we sort of got pushed into, gee whiz, knowledge is expanding, and therefore you can't know as much because you only have a little bit of time. And the push was to get deeper and deeper, and you hear students say, I don't want to take stuff that I don't like. I don't want to take stuff that doesn't relate directly to my program. And parents are saying the same thing, but that forgets the T.
Yes.
And so the pendulum sort of swung over to a little bit too far. And the neighborhoods were designed, 5 years ago to provide a place to do all the experimentation for what Phil's work with companies would suggest that we do. And you have to start early and you have to integrate it with academic experiences. We also know that employers will check the boxes because they see study abroad as an integrative experience. They see research as an integrative experience. And if you do that really well, they know that you put a lot of things together. And now we just need to do that for every student, not just for the 90% or the whatever percent that get their very first job with the highest pay.
I thought part of my education, some of the best part of my education was working for Judd Heathcote, mm-hmm. who taught respect. He taught many things, but one was moderation. Everything is okay as long as it's in moderation. And what he was teaching through that process was don't focus on any one single thing where you become so consumed with that it takes over your life. Well, as I look now, and you can look at the medical field, you can look in mm-hmm. college sports, the specialization that's taking place where you used to have a trainer and today you have all these different individuals that provide specialty care to a student athlete. And in that process, when you start to lose connection between those specialization of task where you're not achieving the ultimate goal mm-hmm. of a complete student athlete, the specialization really becomes destructive versus each one of those individuals having that global concept.
And that's the same with education because we believe that knowledge is expanding so rapidly.
Right.
And we all have to deal with the technology that brings it to us because in the old days it was expanding, but it just wasn't brought to you in your desktop or on your phone, so that you had to confront it all the time. There's been this sort of fragmentation. Mm-hmm. And I think what employers are believing that fragmentation is not something that will serve them well across the span of an employee's career. Mm-hmm. And the disposable employee model or the compartmentalization model is, quite frankly, what got GM in trouble with their little ignition switch.
Sure. That's right.
And to have a high-performing company, you can no longer have unconnected fragmentation.
Same way with Boeing on their 787.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you can pick other things that go along the well. Yeah. I mean, everything sort of was, maybe the way it was designed, mm-hmm. but it just didn't fit together. So, Phil, one piece of advice you'd want to give parents is sort of the short clip to end this that you would say for somebody who has a student coming into college?
Give them the license to get engaged in multiple ways, to reaffirm or find what they really, really want to do, and encourage them to do that. And then make sure that they start from day one being and continually moving forward on that. Don't wait until the end of their academic career.
But being engaged isn't necessarily, I want to be a dentist or I want
to. No, it's not. It's about going and trying to be a member of a group, trying to study abroad, be involved in the things that you've talked about. Try to find out what you're comfortable and meet people that are different than you. That's your whole life's going to be about that. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a group, find out what another group's like. Participate in something that you have, it's unexpected, and those kind of things. So it's not just, if I want to be a dentist, just doing everything and checking off the list to be a dentist. Then you're setting yourself up for some issue, a whole range of issues. Try, and presuming to be a dentist, try, engage in other things that will eventually support your what you want to be totally.
Well, the other part of that is my father's advice, having a GED degree, was that when you go into the work world, the people in the job you finally select, everybody you're going to be competing with will love that part of your job. But that won't necessarily make you rise to the top, because there are all these parts of the job that you didn't train for and you didn't like. And you had to learn how to do the things you didn't like pretty well, because that would set you apart from everybody else in the world. And so I think we're with an age where people make pretty quick judgments about what they like and what they don't and they don't then listen to a speech that they don't like to hear. They turn it off right away. They don't go to a class they may not like. It's quite a waste of time. But it's all about framing your worldview for that moment in time where you're competing with others who do what you do well.
In fact, I just had an employer, really one of my close employers, said that our biggest trouble is it's not just young people. They're coming in, they're taking it, and they're not staying long enough to learn the job, to learn about all the things about it. If they don't like something about it, they just leave. And that's really not serving them well, because you have to learn how to do the things you don't like to make the things you do better.
Thanks, Phil, very much.
You're
for
welcome.
Your leadership.
Thank you very, very much.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was Phil Gardner talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. Gardner leads both the Career Services Network and the Collegiate Employment Research Institute at MSU. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Now here's President Simon and A.D. Hollis with MSU's two soccer coaches. Tom Saxton coaches the Spartan women, and Damon Rensing leads the Spartan men.
It's great to have Tom Saxton and Damon Rensing join us from soccer, and this is probably a great time to talk about this with the World Cup just around the corner here. Talk a little bit about the World Cup games. We'll start with you, Tom, and kind of what that means to you as a coach, and how we Americans should be following that world event.
Always exciting, and you know, we pay close attention to the build up and the qualifying in the last couple of years, and when the year gets here, we're always fired up. And you know, a couple things. One, I think we need to recognize that the World Cup is on par with the Olympics as the most popular and watched sporting event
worldwide,
in the world. And sometimes as Americans, we lose sight of that. And I think from a personal experience, growing up, that was an opportunity for a kid in Flint, Michigan to watch the game on TV, because we didn't have all the different network channels, and the MLS hadn't started yet. And so that was my opportunity to look and find great players and find out what the game was all about and learn from that. And I think that's something we try to impress upon our student athletes, male or female, to this day is that, you know, modeling is a very, very powerful form of learning, as we know. So when you can look at the best in the world playing, especially for their country, it's a cool thing.
And when they drop the teams or the countries, nations into the pools, is that random? Is that seeded? It seems like we got a tough one this go around, but is it? How do they go through that process?
Damon might be able to explain it in better detail, but it is seeded to a degree, and that traditional powers are kind of kept separate as it's drawn out.
Yeah, the top eight teams are seeded based on their FIFA World Ranking, which is based on the qualifications and their friendlies that they've played, and how the results in the previous World Cup were. And then there can only be so many from each region in a group. So there can't be more than two European teams mm-hmm. in the group. There's Africa, and then there's the CONCACAF. So it's all apparently systematically
So is it something the computer does?
The computers do it, and then there's all these the balls that are dropped, and then based on what ball gets thrown out, affects which other bucket is drawn out.
Maybe we should try that with a basketball committee, huh? Just have balls drawn out.
So there's literally so literally you're in the bucket.
It
looks like the lottery. It does,
we were actually in the office watching it right before we got on the bus for a spring game, and we saw, I think, Germany, Ghana, U.S., and then we were waiting to see, and we had two options, like Portugal or somebody else that would have been much better. When we saw Portugal, we just... our heads dropped, and we screamed no, you know, because we are in the group of death. The United States are this summer.
It really has developed, especially you'll notice with, I've got a son who's 14, Very much more so than when I was 14. Very popular with the 14 high school age kids right now. And, you know, I think it's really come up through the high schools, through college. It's high demand, high watch. Everybody's loving it, and it's got to be good for what we're trying to do here at Michigan State as well.
Absolutely. I think we see it in our summer camps, Mark, including your son every single summer. The players, not just the elite club players, but the recreational players across the board get better and better. And it is that exposure to the game and developing a love for the game, because that's what I think is at the core of any athlete. They want to love the sport they participate in. And so it's really been neat to see. And we'll have another opportunity. We did it 4 years ago, and we'll have an opportunity during our summer camps to have basically a U.S. Ghana World Cup watch party, which will be great. We do it in Smith Center, and I think the local news organizations came out last time and hyped it up. It was really cool.
So for someone who is not a soccer fan and didn't grow up with kids playing soccer, so that's what should they be looking for in a game that ends up 0-0 for all that time? I mean, what are the kinds of things that to make the game more enjoyable, more knowledgeable for the viewers, now that we have all this World Cup coverage on TV, what should they be looking for from your point of view, the sort of the cliff notes?
Sure. Well, certainly, just like kind of a baseball, you know, 1-0 type game, there can be a lot of action that still goes on to make it go. Everybody likes to see shots and saves, so you can have a 0-0 game. It's really hard to score sometimes in soccer, but there's a lot of chances that are created. And just the how comfortable it's not in human nature to be able to be comfortable the eye-foot coordination in a ball, and just to see how good all these players are on the ball, what they can do individually is pretty amazing. The other thing that I think is pretty impressive is there's only 3 subs in a game, and it's 90 minutes with no stoppage. There's no timeouts. There's no nothing. So
it's sort of 90 minutes plus if you can figure out how they all add all that time
injury
at the
time.
End.
Yeah. Yep. But the endurance and fitness level of these guys, they say anywhere from 5 to 9 miles they'll run, depending on their position in an average game.
What's the highest level of competition that a soccer player can participate in? Where would they go? Where would they play? What would they do?
Well, I think Damon, you know, not to jinx him, may have one in his club right now. I think we've got a special center midfielder on the men's side that can make it in Europe. And I think from the club perspective, and please, if you disagree, Damon, chime in, but I do think the European leagues are the pinnacle other than playing for your country. And so, you know, one of the big controversies that's gone on the last few weeks is our current national team coach, Jurgen Klinsmann, is mad at some of his players that have chosen to come back and play in the MLS, which is our domestic league. He'd rather have them in Europe honing their game at the very highest level. And so, you know, we'd love to see Michigan State be represented over there. And, again, not to jinx it.
So there you go.
It may
happen. Sure. And there is, you know, there is several, I think, of the 23 players, probably 10 to 15 of them for the United States played in college. Mm-hmm. And we played against a few of them at Michigan State. And I think one of the neat translations between college and playing for your country is you're playing for what you represent. Our guys that come at Michigan State, they play for the Spartan crest, you know. Right. And so they take that that ability, that intangible, and then represent their country. And they understand that a little bit more than maybe a kid who doesn't go to college and just turns pro. They don't quite play for something quite as much. So our goal is to hopefully have somebody play in the, 2018 World Cup?
Mm-hmm.
But you never know. But that would be a great feat for us.
Football, in particular, has gotten a lot of attention about head injuries. And soccer, there's a good deal of contact. And then with not only purposefully with headers, but also inadvertently as people scrum for balls. How do you deal with the issue of concussions? How do you talk about training? How do you think about those issues when you're standing on the sidelines?
Well, I would first credit the professionalism and the knowledge-based performance of our sports medicine staff. They're right on top of it and have been ahead of the game, as we've heard the things that have gone on in the NFL, for example. We've been doing a great job with impact testing for years now, and as the new information's come out on head injuries, we've been very, very meticulous in terms of evaluation. And even the slightest knock had a player in spring training get just hit with a ball, you know, unintentionally, and it jolted her, and you know, we put her through all the proper tests, and so just an awareness of you know, the long term effects of head injury of concussions and just kind of being ahead of things has been great at Michigan State, and I think that there's been a greater awareness throughout the high school and club in this state. You have to take tests now to basically coach youth sports, so that education piece is first and foremost. There has been studies that are evaluating the impact of just heading the ball intentionally and what that might do to youth. Controversial, I guess, among soccer coaches, inconclusive right now, but it's certainly something that's being looked at as well.
It is interesting to watch as a dad and see, you know, both the good coaching that's taking place at the high school level in technique and style and things that kids kind of want to do by nature is being pulled back on and controlled by the coaches and by officials. I think the officials, at least at the high school matches that I've seen, do a fabulous job in communicating with kids and hopefully not taking over the coaching too much. The facilities that you have at Old College Field, the environment, the trees, the surrounding, the center of campus, it's an amazing place to watch as well as train for soccer. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but
I've said many times that, you know, and I've been at this a lot of years now and been fortunate enough to travel to many of the universities across the country like you both have and always evaluating and comparing. And I've said for many years now, I think that Old College Field is the premier site for Olympic sports that I've ever seen in the country, and I mean that sincerely. And I appreciate the support that both of you have given to the
efforts out there.
Except it
took our chipping green away out there.
I remember that from when I was an undergrad here.
But it's the setting. You know, you may see a ballpark or two that looks nicer, that's standing out in an isolated location. But to have a setting right next to Sparty, right next to the academic side of campus, with the river, it's just a beautiful setting.
It's special, and I've been there for, you know, for 15 years too, and then also as a player. And actually, one of my favorite days is we play a lot of Sunday afternoon games, and so we need to practice on Saturdays. And sometimes there's a big football game going on, but we have a blast with it. And you know, we're right in the middle. It just shows more school spirit.
Yeah.
We're right in that setting there. The location is awesome. We have
people
a little
come and watch.
Yeah, pop in and out. You know, 10 to 11 or so, 11 to noon. And
alumni will come by.
It's just and we couldn't do that without that setting and location if we were somewhere else.
What advice would you have for parents who see their son or daughter rising up the ranks of soccer players? What would be the advice you would provide to those parents in terms of either conditioning or for injuries, not wanting to develop too rapidly until neck muscles are... Well, what kind of thing would you say to parents? We have a lot of people listening who have kids engaged in soccer.
I think first and foremost, just to continue to make sure that they have a true love and passion for the game and make sure that they continue to have that and develop that over the years. I think with the opportunities to play in college and some of these elite clubs, you know, I start to wonder who's actually really wanting to play. Is it the scholarship or what? So first and foremost, just really make sure your son or daughter has a really strong passion to play. And then I think just to continue to spend a ton of time with the ball. Seek out people that you trust in the soccer field to help guide you with some decisions that you make. And to me, that's most of it. Just really spend time with the ball. The American players need to really practice. Sometimes we get too caught up in how strong we are, how fast we are. Soccer is, what's beautiful about soccer is you don't have to be 6'3". You know, you can range from anything. It helps to be fast, but even if you're not the fastest, if you're really good on the ball, make good decisions. If you have a good young coach, I would tell somebody, or a good coach for a young son or daughter, and maybe your team's not the best, that's not the worst thing. Just stick with that coach if he's going to continue to teach your son or daughter. Winning's not the most important thing at that age.
But also to make sure that there are this time for what you would call the sort of exercise, just kicking around the ball, bouncing it, doing a wide variety of things that they'll see in the World Cup and
for sure,
and other techniques that can be developed. And what about being alert to injuries? What advice would you have for parents or others about, you know, things to look for? Because you've had a lot of experience with kids, and they're not always honest about how they feel.
Well, I would add that it kind of relates to both of your previous questions, President Simon, is that what we're finding on the women's side is we do more and more research into what has been an epidemic of ACL injuries in our sport as well as other women's sports on campus, as we all well know. It seems pretty clear from the recent evidence that early specialization is not particularly good, especially in the case of a female athlete. So what I've done in terms of some of the talks I've given or at some of our clinics that we have in the wintertime is encouraged young players, middle school and elementary school, is to play lots of sports because you develop your nervous system gets used to more ranges of motion. And if you what we're seeing a lot with early specialization is the evidence that I've seen in some of our journals is there tends to be a little bit greater risk of ACL. And 1 out of 10 female college athletes tear their ACL, and that is a tragedy. So anything we can do to kind of avoid that or make that go down would be really, really good.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was MSU's two soccer coaches talking with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. Tom Saxton coaches the Spartan women, and Damon Rensing leads the Spartan men. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. How many times have you been wearing your Spartan apparel in an airport and a voice in the crowd shouts, "Go Green"? Well, that's happened to me in Beijing, Osaka, Kuala Lumpur, and Mumbai, and even in unlikely places like Ann Arbor and Columbus. There's a special bond we Spartans share, and that's at the foundation of everything we do at the MSU Alumni Association. As the world's largest organization of Spartans helping Spartans, MSUAA truly is your personal network for life. From the moment you join, you've added thousands of fellow Spartans to your personal network, people who will pick up the phone and lend a hand just because you share Michigan State in common. That's the ethic that makes Spartans leaders, lifesavers, and world changers. And that's exactly what you'll find when you become an active member of the MSU Alumni Association. If you share this Spartan spirit, join us at alumni.msu.edu.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear this show again, please click on the local tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.